The Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2023. There are going to be four streams tonight. Later on, the Wessex Nomad, and then Maven Politic, and then the Distributist. But first, I'm here with Eunice Loca from Monoculturi FM. Something that I think is missing from Millennial, and I never really thought that there was a need for it until recently, is a way to acknowledge people who have passed, people in the movement who we've sadly lost each year, because that does, it does happen. And this year we lost Tina from Monoculturi FM, and it was a very sad loss, very surprising, shocked a lot of us. But Eunice, welcome to Millennial. You've obviously been on several times before. Thank you for coming back on, and would you like to introduce yourself and Monoculturi, and then we'll talk about Tina.
Hi. So I'm from Finland, and I started this anti-immigration activism in 2008 or 9, something like that. And in 2015, when actually YouTube started this live stream option, we got lots of attention and a growing audience, and with my friends Tuukka Kuru, who could have come today but he couldn't make it, we started a podcast in 2016, and we started it in March 2016, and Tina Wieck was an interesting blogger that we asked as a guest in April of 2016. And she was so good that she became a host for our show.
It's worth saying she had a YouTube channel of her own called The Swan of Tunella.
Yes. And of course, she lived 20 miles from my hometown, Oulu. And she stayed on our podcast as a regular host, and maybe half a year later we met in person, and then we started to live together, and we did lots of stuff, and we entered the city council, we trigger the leaps and all that funny stuff that was in 2016, 2017, 2018, the so-called alt-right era. And we had a wonderful time. Sadly, this year in May, she suddenly died. And I wasn't home when this happened. I was in Vilnius in Lithuania. And I got a call from the police and a text message that, yeah, there's something serious that we have to talk about. And then, well, I'm not very friendly with the Finnish police, because they are actually harassing us. And but her mother called me and told what had happened. And so I immediately drove back to Finland, and it's been a very hard summer for me. We lived for 7 years. We did the coolest things. But now it's been 7 months. So when you asked me for this program, it's my third or fourth appearance on Millennial. So I thought I am ready to talk about this. In June, Ramsey Paul made, he was in contact with me, and he made a short video where he explained. Tina was his co-host for a while on Happy Homelands. The Red Ice crew, who were on your show a few days ago, they also made a very nice tribute. They asked me to appear there, but I couldn't do it because I was I would have been crying all the time. But it's the first time I'm explaining to the international audience. Tina was very famous on the English-speaking side of this anti-immigration or this racist side. So she was very known there. I'm less known in the English side, but yeah, it's been a very hard time. I remember we met you in Rotterdam in the Netherlands in 2017, and I will always remember when we were at the same Airbnb. It was very epic, very good memories.
Yeah, I remember. And on the rooftop, we'd recorded an interview, and you interviewed me, and you were filming. I think it was for your channel, and I think it went up on your channel with something like a Scotsman abroad or something like that. Interview with a Scotsman, something like that.
I think it was interview with a based Scotsman was the
title.
And I didn't interview. I was just behind the camera. It was right. Tina and Tuukka that were interviewing.
Right. But I do remember the whole situation. It was nice. And it was a strange atmosphere back then. It was it almost felt like the political movement that you have in your head, where like the 60s and 70s, where you meet in different places, everyone's connected a bit, everyone, there's like one degree of separation between each person, and now and then you converge, you meet at a conference, an event. And of course, you stay in each other's flats, that kind of thing. I mean, it still goes on now, obviously, but I think that was the first time I'd really experienced it, and it was via Erkenbrand, the Dutch organization who organized all of that. And then we thought, well, why not create some content here? And so we did that interview, and it was a good. I remember enjoying the interview. It was sort of very relaxed, and it was a sunny day. And we had the big conference going on. I think it was the when I did the 1 hour from now speech. I think it was, yeah. So it was a very much a high point in the movement's span. And yeah, there are nice memories associated with that for me.
Those were easy times because.
Yeah.
In 2017, you were a racist, a Nazi, or a shitlib. So we didn't have this COVID shit, the Ukraine or Gaza or any of this. You either were against immigration or for immigration. So it was very easy to do this. To be an influencer, as they call.
Well, the landscape was very straightforward. It was very simple. And as you say, it was easy in the sense that they hadn't started cracking down on us yet. That was just around the corner for me, just a few months around the corner when I got banned from PayPal. That changed everything. So, but at that moment, it was still it was still easy. And as you say, the trans thing hadn't started yet, really, not in a big way. I mean, it was there, but it wasn't nowhere near what it is now. COVID, all these other issues that have made the landscape more complicated. At that point, the thing was white identity in each country, the Dutch, the British, the Finnish, and so forth. And the threat of Islam to Europe. which oddly has resurged recently because of Gaza. Now other people are taking note of this danger, which we were warning about back in 2017.
Yes, I've been on a break for many months, but with Tuukka we have made some episodes of Monokulttuuri FM, and I told him that I believe in a cycle theory, because this current year, it reminds me of 2016, 2017. It's all starting again, that we have this counter-jihad movement, in which we believed back then. But of course, because of we were banned from YouTube, I was banned from Twitter for 2 or 3 years. So I went on Telegram and I became familiar with the TDS narratives and so on. So nowadays I don't, and actually we started not caring about the Muslim thing, because back then it was, yeah, Muslims are bad because the gays and Jews and all this. Nowadays, I don't care. It's their only good side, basically. So it saddens me so much that she left us, because I've told that in the beginning we were very naive. We were very successful, but very naive also. And now that we really understand the issue, now she left me. So it's very difficult to go on alone. And it's been very hard of course it saddens me that there's lots of positive things that are happening now, but I would like to share, because we shared everything, we talked about lots of stuff even when the cameras were not on, and it was so, she was, I've told many times, she was the most intelligent woman. She was not your typical alt-right e-girl that was trying to make edgy takes, but you asked her one question and she could go on for 5 minutes or even more, and very high quality takes that she had, and yeah, we had a wonderful time. I spent 7 years with this woman.
Yeah, I think that first generation, so to speak, of alt-right women were particularly good. I mean, they were in it for the right reasons. It wasn't e-fame that they were in it for. It wasn't an easy, you know, pay pigs, grifting, that sort of thing. I think there are some who came later who I think were motivated by that, and they didn't tend to do very well. They didn't have anything interesting to say. But I think those ones were generally in it for the right reasons. But yeah, with Tina, there was always a sense that she really cared, that this really mattered to her. And she was an emotional woman. She brought that side to it that I think a lot of guys, you know, we can be a bit spurgy. that was a different side to it. It reminded you that this is a very human thing. And it's shocking and you can see why so many women are closed off from the reality, because once they open their eyes to it, as Tina did, it is difficult to bear. It's difficult for them to live with, because it is so upsetting.
Yeah, I remember the BLM event in our hometown in June 2020, me, Tina, and Edward Dutton were sitting on the city council lawn, and Dutton and Tina were talking about the fact that women, when they get the thing, they are more radical than males, and that's actually true. When we started, we were like, yeah, we don't like immigration, but we are not racist and whatever. But the more we did these streams, the more we got radicalized, or we started to understand that this is something that we are told to do, but we started to go our own way. And of course, we got banned from YouTube and Twitter and all these places. So that's also a sign that we were, they didn't like us. They let, on YouTube, you can do whatever, but what we did was very disturbing for them.
Yeah.
Also, we entered the city. So she moved to my home in, I think it was October 2016. One month later, I told her that, yeah, maybe we should do a U.S. election live stream. Yes, she was immediately yes, and we stayed the whole night up, and she was very high energy. And then a few months later, there was the city council election in our town. All the other parties had 100 candidates, and it was only me and Tina. We were two, and we still got in. So we were. It was legendary. What we did, it was like a racist rock star couple entering the city council and doing very interesting things. Because of course, in Finland, we have some racist parties that the mainstream media calls racist, but
yeah, we're using that term ironically here, obviously.
Yeah. A Finnish BBC journalist called me a racist and a Nazi and whatever. I fought her in the court and I won in the district court and in the appeal court, but the Supreme Court they said that actually I am a Nazi, so I actually lost the thing. But nowadays I don't. If someone calls me a Nazi, I said yes. So what's the problem?
Well, what they want is for you to run away, object to that, and beg them to not call you that. It's a way to weaken you. It's a way to put you on the back foot. And I mean, I don't want that word associated because it's just baggage at this point. But I'm not going to beg them not to call me words like that because it's what they want.
Well, I don't really care anymore. That I've said yes, I am a Nazi. So what's the next question, basically? But I understand that some people don't want to be associated with this label. But,
yeah, well, I mean, in different parts of Europe, it hits differently. But to talk more about Tina, I think one thing is that. And you know, people often say this is a very male movement. There are hardly any women, and it's true. Because I think it costs a woman to socially rebel, to go against the consensus. And I think some of them do it, as I said earlier, for attention. But I certainly don't think that was the case with Tina, or most of that first generation. I think that they were in it for the right reasons. But did it? I think it says it speaks very, very highly of a woman, especially of a guy as well. Let's not do ourselves down here. It's difficult for us to rebel as well. There's a social cost to it and an economic cost to it. But I think for a woman, it's even harder. And I think, therefore, it speaks very highly of Tina that she was prepared to do this.
Yeah, she had her own short videos that she made. She wrote a blog or a post, and then she made a video talking about that blog post. And she was talking about the things that were in 2016 relevant, like the feminism is wrong and all these issues. But then she noticed in 2015 that the migrant thing is maybe fake, because she in Finland the migrant crisis started from the north of Finland, which was like 60 miles from my hometown, but she was 20 miles north, further north, and so she saw also the buses, and she was like, are these tourists? But then she understood that no, these are the Syrian refugees and women, but they were not women. So that's when she started. But she was not a typical woman. She was the most intelligent woman in Finland. Her IQ was super high, and she understood everything. Then she joined our podcast, but also she did other podcasts with some females, and they were laughing about the patriarchy and the usual thing that happened in 2016, the good times when it was easy. But she then joined us, and we moved together, and we started doing much more stuff, and it was... it's difficult to explain in a short time, shortly, but she was the thing. And also then Ramsey Paul, we met Ramsey Paul in 2017 in Stockholm. Also the Red Ice crew, we met them then, and through that she and Ramsey Paul started the Happy Homelands podcast, and they ended it in the COVID year. So, but she was always on the Red Ice Halloween and Christmas or Yule streams, and she was very popular amongst the English speaking sphere. I was more on the Finnish side.
I think people appreciated her. They like it when there's a woman there. It brings a different flavor to everything. It was incredible to see how committed she was. That was a big thing. I think that she seemed to really care about this.
Yeah,
we all do. But with her, it was obvious.
And not only her gender, but also that she was very exceptional. She was not the typical e-girl saying stuff, but she really the first time she was a guest on our podcast, she was so good that she became a host on our podcast, and that's how we after half a year she moved to my place, because we enjoyed ourselves or each other so much that she moved to my place. And
you seem to have a lot of adventures together. You were always going out and about and taking part in marches and filming events and reporting events. I remember there was a march, I think it was in Tallinn, that you did the and I remember when we met, you filmed that, and I remember seeing you both on the live stream. But also I remember, I think it might have been at the Tallinn conference, but there was one where you were putting together some equipment in order to broadcast, and it was all so improvised. And I remember really admiring the way you did it. It was all a lot of ingenuity there.
Yeah, Tallinn, it was Etnofuture 2. You were a speaker there. If I remember correctly, Jared Taylor was a speaker. Tuukka Kuru was a speaker there. And that was February 2018. So we had done this many times. So we had gotten experience. But yeah, we did lots of things. We always were streaming Monoculture FM basically is like PWR, Mark Collett's Wednesday stream. But in addition to this, we also went outside and filmed these either conferences or marches or anything that was relevant or even not. We have also streamed some Pride events. We have, in our hometown, we have had some zombie marches. We have had communists talking in their conferences. We have always crashed or entered their places and streamed, and it was always a fight that you cannot film here. And we always stood our ground and said, Finland is a free country. We have the right to film whatever public event you produce. So, yeah, it was not only the studio streams, but also outside events. We went abroad. We went to Stockholm. We have been to northern Sweden to film the Nordic resistance movement. We have been to the first time we met was in Rotterdam. We were in Paris to film the Le Pen Macron elections. We even went to Vienna to monitor the Mr. Bond hate speech rap thing where he got 10 years. And I also went to the Vienna jail to interview him. So we did a lot of things. We were in the city council. We did lots of things that made an impact maybe on our hometown. We exposed the grooming gangs in Oulu. We did lots of things that the so-called populist far-right parties in Finland don't do, because now that the Finnish government is composed with these populists, it's like Italy, Meloni, or maybe Geert Wilders in Holland. They will not do anything. So we did lots of interesting stuff, and we were too honest, and that's why last week I had 7 hate speech charges against me, and it's very tragic that all these hate speech things we did together, but now I'm alone in the court and they want tens of thousands of euros from me. And my income was reliant on our podcast thing, because I don't get any money from the government, or I'm not on social security. Now that she's dead, I have big difficulties to produce this content. So my income is close to zero, but I have to answer to the judge that is this hate speech or not. And Finland is one of the worst. Britain is very bad on the hate speech laws in the UK are very bad, but I think Finland is even worse. Even Sweden is a free country compared to Finland, I would say.
Yeah, it's a different culture in each country. They have a different notion of what and why someone should be allowed to say this or that. In Britain, it's pretty bad in Britain. But yeah, in Finland, would you like to talk about the charges or what they're saying? I mean, if it's private or risky to talk about, then
well, I can talk in general about them. So last week I had Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. I was sitting for 7 hours in the district court, and Friday was maybe the funniest day, because the charges were that I had subtitled a Finnish BBC PSA a public service announcement in the Somali language. So it was a March 2020 PSA from the Finnish BBC with a Somali newsreader who was saying whatever, but I subtitled it like a Hitler video, you know, the Untergang, with random text subtitles, and that was hate speech. And it was, maybe I will win that one. Another one was that another hate speech was that 21 we had the second election. I mean, because we entered the city council in 2017, so 21 we had the we tried to renew our city council presence. So I had the Finnish BBC had asked, should our hometown wave the pride flag? And I said no, because trans people, they have these problems. 42% or 43% to commit suicide, and it's not a healthy lifestyle. So that's hate speech in Finland also. But the other days, it was some random shitlibs that had been trolling our live chat, and because I replied to them, they were offended, and that's hate speech. And also, you probably remember the TikTok dance video, No No Square.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So those dancers were civil servants from our hometown, and we had criticized them harshly. And on Wednesday, I sat with them for 6 hours, and they said, "We are still on therapy. We are." Because of what I and Tina said on our couch. So, and they want €25,000.
The No No Square people.
Yeah. The main dancer. She wants 10,000, and there's another woman who wants 10,000, and then 5,000, and then also the lawyer fees in addition to this. It's completely insane. In Finland, I've seen cases where you murder a guy and you don't have to pay so much. But in Finland, hate speech is the most expensive speech. Or it's if you kill a guy, it doesn't matter. You get free. You don't even go to jail, maybe. But you don't have to pay anything. Or you have to pay. I've seen. In Tampere, in southern Finland, there was a case where a disabled woman in a wheelchair was raped by seven Iraqis or whatever, and they had to pay 2,500. But I have to pay 10 times that amount. So talking about people in Finland is more expensive than killing them or raping them, which I've always mentioned to the judge that, if you sentence me to pay tens of thousands of euros, can I also, well, I don't want to rape them, but it would be cheaper for me to do that or even kill them, which is absurd, because of course you in Europe, you think that the northern countries are somehow sane, but actually they are not. It's life is cheap. But so-called defamation, which is, we never defamed, we always stayed on the facts. And the thing is with the TikTok dancers, when Tina tweeted the video, James Woods retweeted it, and the video got 2 million views.
That's the actor, James Woods.
Yeah. Right, so yeah. That became a news article in our media that Tina asked James Woods to target these people or harass these people or make them risible or laughable. When we did not, Tina just tweeted something and accidentally James Woods retweeted it. But they claim that this has caused lots of hate against our very good project, which I talked against because even after the project, the rape problem with the immigrants in our hometown had increased plus 157%. So their TikTok dance didn't, it had no use. The only maybe useful outcome from that would have been that the migrants would have laughed themselves dead. They see this. This is your reaction to our sexual grooming gang. They would. Well, you from UK, you know how it's.
Oh yeah, I remember in Sweden there was a music festival, and it was around the 2017-18, and they were having a problem with migrants assaulting, touching these teenage girls, these Swedish girls. And their solution was to wear these wristbands that said something like, don't touch me, or it's not allowed, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it was hashtag Tafsa Inte.
Sorry?
It was hashtag Tafsa Inte, which in Swedish means don't harass me.
Yeah, right, that kind of thing, yeah. So what effect do they think that's going to have on migrants who probably can't even speak Swedish or read Swedish? So, I mean, it's just absurd. And I actually made a point. I made a video then. It was titled something like, how would you make Swedish music festivals safe? Or how would you stop people rape? It had a long title. And I was making the point that there's really the only way to do it is to close the borders. Because once they're there, they're going to go to these festivals and they're going to do this in large numbers. So you can't prosecute every one of them. You can't even identify most of them. So it's completely, once they're in the country, your young women are very, very vulnerable to them. And that was the point, that you can only beat this with collectivism.
In Sweden or generally in Western Europe, even if these festival harassers had been caught, they wouldn't get anything. They would not get any jail time, nothing. And it has gotten only worse because maybe last year or 2 years ago, in France, you could see that at festivals, the migrants are jabbing people with some needles. And also, they have been drugging them with when you are in a pub or a nightclub, they will put something in your drink. But nothing happens. Nothing happens. So that's one of my big issues, that what's the use of the police? The shitlibs are always, yeah, just call the police, but the police don't do anything. And if the police even take them, when they are in court, they will be freed and nothing happens. They will never be deported. And if they get fines, they will not pay them. If they go to jail, for them, jail is just like a hotel. So it's... it's a problem. We, like Reda says, no, just go out, remove them. And,
yeah, just deport them. That is the only solution here. As you say, the justice system, well, it victimizes people like you. It's good at doing that, but it's utterly useless when it comes to effectively punishing these people for crimes like this.
Have you seen the French village Crépol, where a very small village where the migrants had, or the, they were not recent migrants, they are second or third, even fourth generation migrants that had come to that dance party in a village where 500 people live. It has been, I've been following the French media a lot, and it's their fault. And now people from the ghetto where these stabbers came from, they are probably next week they will be invited to the parliament in France. Not the French people, but just these migrants or these North Africans. So our system is very evil and anti-white. And of course, everybody knows that, but I still find it important to always mention this.
Absolutely. It's very important because it's continuing. It's as bad as ever. In some ways, it's worse than ever. It should be said. It's a cliche and people will get tired of hearing it. And I don't like to depress people, especially at Christmas time. But it is worth remembering that the situation is very bad. And some people are victimized by the system in a big way. And other people are victimized by the reality of mass immigration. Lives are changed forever by an attack by some migrant. I actually just read... earlier today, before I went to bed, I read, because I'm nocturnal from millennial, that there was a girl, I think she was Swedish, she was 14, she was raped by a group of, I think it was Africans, and I think it was three or four Africans who raped her, and in 2011, I think it was, and she killed herself a month later, because what had happened was so awful. And I do think this is part of it, the trusting nature, the innocent nature of Northern Europeans, especially Northern Europeans, means that they can't conceive of what it is that's coming up from the global south. And they're devastated by it.
We had also a couple of girls that killed themselves in our hometown. And when I exposed me and Tina, we did this, there were some rumors that some girls had hanged themselves. And our local police was, like in Rotherham, they were covering it, but I knew that this had happened. There was a 14-year-old girl that had hanged herself in our hometown. And I saw an article in the mainstream media where our local police said that, we have no information about this. So I called our local police chief and I said that if you don't stop lying, I will tell this girl's name in the next city council meeting. And this was on Thursday or Friday, 2019, January. And on Monday, we had this meeting where we had lots of police officers answering the councilmen. And on Saturday, they made an announcement that actually it is true that we have at least one girl that had committed suicide. So I forced the local police to acknowledge that this is true. And these people have to be forced. People have this idea that the police, they are serious people, but no. In our generation, many of the police officers, they are like Antifa. They are brainwashed themselves with this Sikh ideology. They will be very outraged if someone says something racist. But when actual real crime, very tragic stuff happens, they will cover it up. Like in Dublin, when the Irish started to riot, I remember this police officer saying that, yeah, these are completely crazy, insane people. They are rioting for nothing. He would never say that about migrants or a BLM, mostly peaceful thing. So,
oh, no.
So no. A big difference, if we look at what I and Tina did, we, of course, we produced internet content, live streams, but we also very heavily participated in the politics, because I saw immediately that, okay, we can talk about this on the internet, we can gather a big audience and be very popular and so on, but I wanted to make an impact on also the local politics and also on other. I've participated in basically all elections. So to me, well, some people will say that democracy is gay, and of course I agree with that. But I also, at the same time, I want to participate in that. So you get a certain status, and with that status, you get more respect from the officials, or you don't get respect, but they have to answer legally to what you say, and what you say they have to take into account. So it's much more impactful to also participate simultaneously into politics, as at the same time comment on recent events or news and so on. Like the Patriotic Alternative does, or, well, the NJP, but now they have dark times now.
Yeah, they're regrouping, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bad situation. And I think sometimes we forget that. Sometimes we want to forget it. But there are people at the coalface, at the front line of this, like Eunice, who are, you know, bearing the brunt of it. I think we should remember that. Is there any way that people can help you in the, well, can help you with these charges, with these legal attacks?
Well, in Finland, the law is very strict on collecting money or asking for donations, but it only applies to a Finnish audience. So as this is probably not a Finnish audience, I can ask for help. But maybe the easiest way is that if someone wants to help with this, maybe DM me, send me a message or an email. I'm on Twitter. I got my account back. I'm on Gab. And I'm on Telegram, so if someone can help me, I will take the, but maybe not publicly, because Finland is is a very weird country. So what could I say on this? Send me a private message on Twitter or Telegram or Gab or maybe an email.
It seems an incredibly difficult situation that an awkward situation that they've put you in, that the system has put you in. And of course, I didn't necessarily mean monetary help, but I wouldn't exclude that. But other types of help as well could be available. Who knows? Advice, legal advice. I don't know.
Last week, as I said, I had 3 days in court. So Tuesday and Wednesday's decision will be on the 21st of December, and the Friday thing will be on January the 15th. So those are the 2 dates when I get to know how much I have to pay to these offended people. Actually, in November, I was also in court because one police officer that was also in the city council, he was bringing these migrants to the kindergarten, and he was involved in this, and he said that this is the best integration program ever, but it caused lots of rapes. But he was offended, so I have to pay him 1,500 euros to this police officer. So it's, of course, I will appeal. Actually, I have already appealed. My next court case is in February. The system has gone totally against me. I don't really care, but I know that Tina took it heavily. Tina was a very strong woman. But all the hatred we got from the shit leaves, from the officials, from the system, she had had sicknesses even when she was a teenager. When she moved to my place, it got better, but all this stress and this, and actually this summer when everything stopped totally, I realized under how much pressure we actually were. And I don't really care. I actually enjoy when people hate me, because I know I'm doing something right. But Tina was a strong woman, but she it brought back lots of health issues that she had, and it's so sad. She was the love of my life. She was such a bright woman that I don't know what to say. But
I'm sorry. I really am sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see what she was like.
Yeah, you met her, so
yeah,
and we're together. This is the first time I'm alone on your show, but last year we were not here, but 2 years ago we were. It was just a year when the Belarus, Lukashenko sent migrants to Lithuania, Latvia, and Poland. We went there, this weekend I rewatched the interview we did in Lithuania. It was the best journalism ever. We entered the migrant facility, and the migrants, their English is very poor, but she still managed to very cunningly make them say things that prove that they are liars. It was such a good interview, the best ever. All the other media, the Finnish media, they were like, yeah, these are poor refugees and they are being used by the Russians and whatever. Now, this year we have, since Finland joined NATO, we have this same problem, but in Finland, Russia is sending, they have, I think it's over 1,000 migrants that have entered through the Finnish eastern border. And if she were alive, we would probably be there now on the eastern border, interviewing the officials, the migrants, everybody, and asking what is this circus show. But
so it was a partnership. You had adventures together, but you also achieved a lot together. There's a lot that you did that people are thankful for and will remember. I hope that's of some consolation to you, that it didn't.
Yeah, the energy or the synergy, when we worked together, it was so good. Now it's more difficult to continue alone, but I will go on. I will never stop this, what we started.
Good. Yeah, I think it's obviously a matter of adapting, changing how you work to find a way that you can do that works for you. Indeed.
I also remember when we were in Lithuania in 2020, just 1 month before COVID, and we were at the Grata Hotel before the Prabudimas conference, where you were a speaker also. And at the breakfast table, you were eating an egg like a British guy. It was a funny thing.
Yeah.
We didn't tell you, but you were like, he's eating an egg like a British guy. Of course, you are Scottish.
I didn't know that I eat an egg in a British way, but yeah.
Well, in Finland, we don't do that.
But, right. Yeah. I do remember that. Yes, at the hotel. I think I had that each morning. We were there for two or three nights. Well, you wanted to talk about other things that have happened this year with, really because of the Ukraine war. I don't know what your position on all of that is. It affects people differently in that part of the world, and Finland is right next to Ukraine. One of the things was Finland joining NATO. What would you say about that?
As I said previously, in the alt-right days, it was easy, either racist or shitlib. But then there was the COVID shit. I will not comment on that. But it also split somehow the racist people into two, the ones that believe or think it's very serious. But what annoys me is that we commented always very objectively. We took all the sides. Actually, Tina took the COVID vaccinations. I didn't. But still, the ones that thought that the vaccine is a poison, they hated us because she took them. But the ones that didn't, it was completely insane. Then we had the Ukraine war, and Finland is a country where it's very difficult to talk about this Ukraine and Russia war, because everybody is against Russia, because Russia has been always an enemy. But Tina told me that, don't you think it's very odd that that everybody is, it's like a psychosis, that everybody is for Ukraine in Finland and nobody takes facts as reality. And I said, yeah, I completely agree that it looks like a hockey game where Russia is winning, but the commentators are saying, no, Ukraine is winning. So I don't really care who is winning there, but our point was that, yeah, we just bring the facts that what is happening, the ghost of Kiev. My first take on the Ukraine wars was laughing at the ghost of Kiev hoax. And I was amazed how angry that made our audience. But we never backed down. We always were against the mainstream narrative. But Tina was called a Russian whore and I'm also called a Putinist, but I've been called that since 2015, so it doesn't really matter, and I don't care what people say. But we try to just talk about this conflict in a rational, in an adult way. No wishful thinking that, yeah, the Russians are losing because they don't have, they are all drunk and they don't have guns, but Ukraine, they are getting NATO guns and everything will be fine. But if you look at this now, it looks like we were right back then. Then what's the next thing that happened? Yeah, this Israel and Gaza. Well, when we started in the alt-right days, we were pretty much neutral on this because this conflict did not start on October 7th, but it started in the 40s. So in the alt-right days, we were basically neutral, maybe a bit leaning to Israel because it was the only democracy and whatever.
More Western. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Palestinians, they are brown people. They are the Muslims that are raping our girls here. But this year, our narrative has a bit changed because, well, not Tina, because she died in May. But she didn't see this. What is currently happening, but yeah, well, actually I attended a Palestinian march in Helsinki a few weeks ago, and it was funny, but I noticed that it's very heavily managed by the leftists, so they're like playing that, yeah, we are for Palestine, but we don't like Hamas. And the Palestinians are victims. They don't have, we like them, but they don't have the right to fight and all these things. So, nowadays, well, it's not a key issue for me, but I've tried to say that, what the media and the based far right in the parliament are saying is that Israel has to win. But when we say that, yeah, if Israel wins, they will deport all these 2.5 million Palestinians to Europe. This is not a good thing. So, and also the problem that Israel has the right to fight these people, but when it happens in Manchester, don't look back in anger. If it happens in Paris, in the Bataclan, we shouldn't talk about this because it will create a backlash against Muslims. But for some reasons, the Israelis have the right to bomb them and make them a parking lot or whatever. And but also this doesn't really sink in the Finnish audience. They are all, what, are you with the Muslim terrorists? No, we are not. But if you look at this rationally, maybe Israel is not right on this. And also there are other reasons, but everybody knows them. I guess your viewers are very familiar with this.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's a complicated thing. Yeah. And you can say that there's a territory dispute. They both have a different type of claim to that territory. It does seem to me that Israel has been belligerent. But maybe they're correct in that Hamas are using people as human and children as human children. I don't know, honestly. What I would say is Israel's military conduct in this war seems grotesquely over the top, demolishing, but just blowing up buildings because you think there might be a Hamas terrorist in there. And so you kill dozens of people for the sake of, I mean, it's I just don't see how that's justifiable. And also targeting refugee camps as well. I mean, they seem to have flattened Gaza. They seem to have destroyed... Someone said the other day it was 80 or 85% of the buildings in Gaza are now gone. I haven't heard that elsewhere, so I don't want to pass that off as gospel. But either way, it just looks like Israel is being far more heavy-handed than is necessary here. And then you've got the whole stuff about this is happening because of the initial October the 7th attack. And there's no thing there that Israel must have known about that in advance and therefore allowed it to happen so that they could do what they're now doing. I mean, it just seems common sense.
Yeah, maybe they knew, maybe they didn't. But my point is that when it happens in Europe, like the Bataclan, where 130 French were killed, or the Manchester nail bomb thing happened, don't look back in anger. Play Q Oasis, Don't Look Back in Anger. And that's the only allowed reaction from Europeans. But the Israelis, they have the right to bomb everything.
And their feelings within, like, so for British Jews, their feelings matter. So if brown people in Britain are saying horrible anti-Semitic things, then they should be deported. But if brown people in Britain are saying anti-British things, anti-white things, then that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, and also these brown people, they were brought in as refugees because they were oppressed in their home countries. So they were brought to Europe where you have freedom. But now that they have freedom of speech and whatever, but now that their freedom of speech is wrong, now they want to be they want to deport these people. But when these people commit rapes, cannot deport anything.
They can rape our young girls by the thousand. There is no group threat. It would be terrible to bring in group dynamics into it. It's just a few bad individuals doing this to some individuals. That's how we're meant to see it. Never in group terms. But again, as soon as Jews are offended, then it's a group thing.
Yeah, and in Germany, they have even in the alt-right days, they were claiming that there's lots of anti-Semitic attacks, and it's all the far right. But back then, we already knew that the German police, they do statistics in such a way that when something anti-Semitic happens, it's always the far right. But this year, even the Berlin police said that maybe we should make a difference if the anti-Semites are white Germans or if they are these people. But if these people were brought to Europe because of freedom and whatever, how is it fair to deport them because they have wrong opinions? I don't care about their opinions. I care about what they are, the rapes, and also the thing, the fact that they are replacing our population, and they are the cities are not recognizable. You look at Birmingham, you look at London, you look at any big city, you look at Paris, there's less than maybe 20% of white people in those cities.
And among the young, it's really bad. I mean,
it's even worse. Yeah. It's the same in Finland. We have kindergartens where everybody is a migrant. We have schools where 80% of the school kids are not Finnish. So it is happening even in Finland. You look at everybody knows about Sweden, but Finland is coming very closely behind, and that's. That's also one of my takes when we talked about COVID or Ukraine or this. I said, these subjects don't really matter. What really matters, what we should focus on every day is the replacement that is happening. That's the biggest issue. We can disagree on Gaza or Israel or Ukraine or Russia or COVID. It doesn't really matter. What matters is demographics, and that was always my final take on the on our shows. But people, well, you know,
people I, th- are not- I yeah, but I think people are more and more amenable to that message that demographics really is destiny, and it, opinions, you know. people can have all sorts of opinions and people can have all sorts of disagreements. Ultimately, demographics is destiny. Everyone in their heart knows that. The only thing to get through to them is that foreigners don't tend to think like us. They don't really, you know, they'll argue about things, but ultimately they will defend their own group and they will identify with their own group. You know, so you know, they might agree with you or disagree with you about COVID. It doesn't matter. Their grandchildren are going to dominate yours if you even have any. That's the reality. That's the hard demographic reality of it. And I think this is what people need to get into their heads, as always, that the demographics matter because they are it overrides the whole cultural thing. You know, because I think white people, a lot of them still think, well, it doesn't matter, though. It's only skin color. The culture will continue. But I think more and more they're seeing that, no, it really won't. And actually, the Gaza thing has helped them to realize that, ironically. It's perverse. But if it works, I'll take it. You know, this, I do think that the public are gradually coming around to this.
Yeah, it looks like public opinion is against Israel, but I don't really know if it's...
they're it's against like Israel, yeah, but also against the migrants in Europe.
Yes, because paradoxically, all the anti-white propaganda has... Now it's doing a backlash against them. So, but it's very weird because at least in Finland, if you say that, yeah, I don't care about Israel, they will say that you are leftist, you're communist. So they are putting you in a thing that if you are right wing, you have to be pro Israel. If you are left wing, you have to be that, but it's all everything is fake in this narrative. In Finland, it's not our strategy hasn't yet worked, but in other countries, yeah, it looks like people are saying that the Israelis are white, the Palestinians are brown. So if you look at the intersectional feminism, the brown people are the real victims.
Yeah.
So, but in Finland, Finland is always behind everything culturally. Maybe one day we'll get there. But
well, yeah. And one other thing is that people are simply struggling now in a way that they weren't 10 years ago. The economics, life is tougher now than it was. And I think I've always said that progressivism, all of that, is a creed of luxury. It depends on luxury. It depends on being not having to really worry about your own life and your own wealth. Once people do, all of these ideas, trans, gay, multiculturalism, all of those, they're luxury beliefs, and they all, I think, fall away because people realize that they've got more immediate concerns, which are exacerbated by mass immigration. I mean, the wages, the housing, the public services, all of this becomes much more sharply focused as time passes.
Well, we have had lots of inflation, so prices are much higher than 2 years ago. Electricity is super expensive now. So maybe that you would think that that causes some rethinking about among the normies, but I'm not seeing it yet. But
no, I'm not saying that it's everywhere or even that it's very obvious. I think it's still quite subtle, but I do think it's there, and I think it's on the way. Life doesn't feel like it felt 5 years ago. You know, it's darker, it's more dangerous. There's more of a sense of society falling apart than there was 5 years ago.
Yeah, as I said, when even seven years ago when we started with my wife, it was funny, it was nice, but after the COVID year, everything became very dark and annoying, actually. So they managed to do this.
Oh, definitely. It demoralized many people, including in our movement. I think COVID was a terrible time. The energy just went, the conferences stopped happening. People were stuck indoors all the time, and there was a sense of the sheer power of the powers that be, and it was depressing as hell.
For us, it was not so much depressing, but Tina stopped her involvement with the Happy Homelands on Ramsey Paul's stream, and then she told me that we have to make an English stream, so we made 54 episodes, and 2020 we did every week, we had like five or six streams. It was very hectic. All the events were cancelled, so we were only doing the studio streams. It became, it was not so much fun as previously it had been. And 21, it continued and so on. But and also the audience changed, because we as podcasters, we were not, and maybe introvert people, we were not so bothered that you couldn't enter a pub or go to some places, but even our Independence March was cancelled in Finland, and lots of other regular events that we used to attend and stream, and they all were cancelled. So it was it changed the nature of our activities.
Yeah. I think it did that for everyone, and it was but I think for you especially, because you were always out and about. So yeah, it was a different thing.
Although Finland didn't have very strong restrictions compared to other places.
Right. One other thing that I wanted to ask about was the closing the border with Russia, because they were sending in migrants.
This is an interesting topic. Everybody remembers 2015, the big so-called migrant crisis. Finland, from Sweden, about 32,000 Iraqis and Syrians and all these people entered from Sweden. But in 2016, 1,700 entered from Russia, and it was April the 10th when our president and Vladimir Putin met, and they reclosed the border, so it stopped. But this year, I remember it was, I think it was in November, we started to get some reports from the border that between August and September, 91 so-called refugees had entered from Russia. And when this thing became public, the amount of these fake refugees from the eastern border, it increased. Some days we had 100, some days 200, 300. So now that we have a far-right government, the so-called True Finns, they closed the border. And it was a huge debate that will they freeze there? It was minus 30 degrees when they started closing the borders. Minus 30 Celsius. So they decided to close the border for 2 weeks. And this ended 1 week ago on the 13th. But as soon as they reopened the border, almost 400 came in. So they reclosed it. And now it's closed for, I think, 1 month. But you look at Estonia, they are not closing the border. They are just telling the asylum seekers to not come. If you are legal, you can enter. But Finland, as Finland is a very weird country, either you say no one enters, or you have to let everybody in. And also this so-called far-right government, they during their regime, we had the biggest amount of legal immigrants. I think this year it's been 50,000 legal, so-called legal. So it's also this eastern border controversy is maybe it's a subject to talk about this and not the fact that they are letting in other people to work here. So because this year it's a record number of legal migrants that we have. So the media will not say this in Central Europe or even in our country, but we have been monitoring the situation. It's not good.
Yeah.
We are not happy.
The numbers go up all the time. I mean, it's the same with in Britain under the Conservative Party.
When Brexit happened, the amount of EU migrants dropped. You have no more Polish people, but now you have all the people from the Commonwealth.
So it's just skyrocketed. And that's under the Tories, who are the Conservatives, who are supposedly far right, hard right.
But they're all brown.
Yeah, that's the other thing. They're all brown. Exactly. Exactly. That's another psyop sort of thing that's happened in Britain. It's the same as the Conservative Party was forcibly, I mean, I say it forcibly, I think it was orchestrated that Rishi Sunak was basically installed as leader. I think the same thing was done in Scotland with Hamza Yousaf. Apparently a similar thing is likely to happen in Wales. And of course, then there's Varadkar in Ireland. It's utterly bizarre, especially when you think about the demographics of Scotland. I mean, the odds of the Scottish National Party and the Labour Party both being headed by brown men, the odds of that are infinitesimally tiny. It's just incredible that would happen. So, of course, it was orchestrated. It must have been.
My picture of the UK was that, okay, London, Birmingham, Manchester, maybe those are totally brown cities, but Wales,
exactly.
Scotland.
Yeah, exactly. Ireland, Manchester, but Leicester, Luton, Birmingham for sure, yeah. London for sure. But yeah, Wales and Scotland and even Ireland. I think Ireland is still about 95% Irish. It's utterly wacko and yeah, it's not happening naturally.
Actually, on one of our podcasts with Tuukka, I asked, or with someone, I was like, how did these brown people get elected in Ireland or Scotland? Were they like the best brown guy, or how did they get elected? Rishi Sunak was not elected. He replaced, I think, Boris Johnson because of some stupid
shit. Liz Truss. He replaced Liz Truss, but he was put into place as leader after, so he never faced an election. As far as
how did you are from Scotland? How what is this Hamza Youssef guy?
Well, it's the same thing.
Was he based?
No, absolutely not. He's a Muslim who is actually has spoken in defense of trans and LGBT and all that. So, but also very much in favor of migration from Pakistan and so forth. So, as you would expect. So he's completely, is the opposite of based. He's certainly not Scotland's based brown prime minister. No, not at all. No, what happened with him was that Nicola Sturgeon was the first minister and the leader of the SNP. She had to resign under, it's kind of unclear why, but she had to resign. And he was put in place. I think he won an internal party election. But yes, he did, because his rival was Kate Forbes, who was white and Christian. But the question is, how did he win that internal election? And nothing at all would surprise me because of the stakes. Winning that internal leadership election meant that he would become the first minister of Scotland, the prime minister, the political head of Scotland. So nothing would surprise me about what they did to make that happen.
This May, I was in Tallinn. There was this conference, spring conference organized by Frodi Midjord. And after the conference, I saw that we were sitting at a pub and there was a Scottish guy that was a follower of yours. And he was very angry about the Scottish situation. And, it's funny to
I'm not surprised.
to meet people around Europe, and it was a nice conference to attend and to stream and so on. After that conference, I went to Eastern Estonia, and then to. Well, Eastern Estonia, there were some Soviet cities that were quite interesting. But then I went to Latvia and I entered Lithuania, Vilnius, actually. And my plan was to go to Minsk in Belarus and then to Kiev to do some live streams from the Ukraine. But when the next day I entered Vilnius, I got this message that my wife had died. So I was at that time, I was so devastated that I had to cancel my plans to go to Belarus and Kiev, Ukraine. So I drove directly back to Finland and I miss those olden days when we had this Ethno Futur, Erkenbrand, and all this. It was they were not so dark days as I'm now facing.
Yeah,
it's very hard to get back to this and talk to an audience without sobbing or even crying.
I'm sorry. I really am sorry for what you've suffered this year and what you're going through just now. I think everyone wishes you the very best of luck. There are very sympathetic comments on Telegram and Odyssey.
On Odyssey, I have some videos from the Baltic states from made at a paywall. So that's also a way to support financially. In Latvia, I saw a police operation where they stopped a migrant car with 8 black guys, and they were very rough on them. So, and I accidentally got to film all the thing. I got a Latvian soldier with, you couldn't see his face. He was so angry. He said, "You have to remove this video." And I said, "Yeah, I will remove it." But actually, somehow it stayed on my phone. So I got to publish it. I have videos from Eastern Estonia, which are interesting. Tallinn is not the only city in Estonia. You can find my Odyssey channel at JLock.
JLock, yeah. I'll link that after we've finished the stream. People are saying, sorry for your loss. Deepest condolences. RIP. We are glad you're here. Stay strong, brother. Deepest sympathy, and so on. I want you to know that people are sympathizing in as much as they can. And people are people do care.
Well, so. I'm not reading the comments, but when this became news in Finland, all the shitlibs were enjoying themselves, and they were shitting on me. But I noticed that I don't really care about the hateful or the people that are enjoying her death. It gives me more strength. And for some reason, the friendly comments, they make me sentimental. I thank everybody of this, but yeah, when I met a friendly or comment or a friendly guy, I was on the Estonia ferry. People that I didn't know came to me and also were telling their condolences. Or if I go to the supermarket, I see people that are unknown to me, and they are also friendly. Those are the people that make me cry because they are so friendly. But all the hateful things, I enjoy when the shitlibs are showing their true faces.
Yeah, and it's amazing how shameless they are about it.
Well, it's both sides. If some of our my political opponents in Finland die, I'm not a good person, but in this fight, I've seen that they don't. When we started, we were like, everybody has freedom of speech, everybody's equal. But nowadays, I don't really care about those people.
It does toughen you up for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the years of contempt and abuse and from them, and bullying and campaigning against us, campaigning to deprive us of funding, platform, free speech, and of course to put us through the courts. After years of that, yeah, it becomes difficult to care about them. And that's a thing. This is why people say war is hell. You stop. It takes away your humanity. It mutes that because the enemy has done so much to you. So I understand. Well, okay. There was a super chat from Rogue Trader who said, "Thank you, Eunice, for coming on here under tragic circumstances and for still carrying on the good fight. Tina will obviously be deeply missed and fondly remembered by all. You too, for how you both stood up and spoke out before it was as easy as it is now." I think he's referring really to the situation in Britain and America, where it's now easier to say these things than it was in 2016. Yeah, I think your service to this movement will always be remembered, and obviously Tina's as well. I think we'll always fondly remember her and the contribution that she made. I will always remember discovering her channel, The Swan of Tunella, and then following her progress with you and Monica Alturi, and meeting you both, and then attending your and speaking at two of your conferences. So,
yeah, you were also in Finland.
Awakening 1 and 2. So she will not be forgotten, and neither will what you have done. So thank you, Eunice.
Yeah. Thanks to the super chatter.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll end it there. And you've done well, Eunice. So thank you for appearing.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And let's talk later. And
you're welcome.
Have a good Christmas, Merry Christmas, and a good year, and all that, and good guests on this millennial show.
All right, thank you. I'll be back in 20 or 30 minutes with the next stream. In the meantime, Eunice, thank you, and RIP Tina Vilk.
Yep.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Find the info at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.